This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault, Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, and Mike Herzing.
Welcome to another edition of the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. I'm Matt Perrault. You're not going to get a lot of me this week. You're going to get a whole lot of Mike Herzing and a whole lot of Eileen Falkenberg-Hull. They were together for a very special event for Nissan. We've got news and notes, automotive reviews, all sorts of great stuff coming up on the podcast. Questions and answers as well. A return for that. We haven't done that in quite a long time. You guys sending in your questions to letstalkwheels.com. But without further ado, let's get right to it. It's time for the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. Mike Herzing and Eileen Falkenberg-Hull with Nissan in a big news and notes segment to start us off here on the podcast.
Hey guys, we're at the Nissan Versa launch here in Nashville, Tennessee. Eileen Falkenberg-Hull and I am here. And I tell you what, Eileen, this has been a really nice trip. I wish we could tell everybody about it, but we have to wait till next week.
Yeah, there's a lot to tell about the Versa, but like you said, we have to wait till next week. We're in beautiful Nashville. It's a gorgeous couple days here. We're very, very lucky to be able to share this experience.
You know, everybody's whining when I got on here. You know, I'm coming from the airport. They're going, it's 85 degrees and oh my gosh, and the humidity is really high. And I was like, wait a minute, don't even talk about that. Add 10 degrees to it and a little bit more humidity, and that gets you used in Texas. So everybody else, folks that are listening in, you have better weather than that. I appreciate it, you know, but oh well, it's one of those things. All right, we got a lot of news and notes this week. Tell us a little about what's going on.
Yeah, so we have Toyota and Mazda. They are working together to build a plant in Mississippi, which is not really new news. That's been around for a while.
Yeah, right.
But they're actually shifting their production plans, which is really interesting. They were planning on building the Corolla there. Now, we know that Corolla sales are down along with everything
all
else.
All cars are down right,
right
now.
Right, right. So it makes sense for them to shift plans to something that's possibly more of a revenue generator for them. And now they're going to be building a...
You mean something that somebody will buy?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody wants SUVs and trucks right now, so hopefully they're bringing on some SUVs, right?
Yeah, it says they're calling it a yet-to-be-announced SUV at the site. There's some discussion about bringing a Mazda 2 there and kind of something new, maybe bringing something from overseas. There's a lot of discussion there. It will probably be something smaller to the lineup, probably not something large, but it's a really interesting change, but good because the South still gets a plant. They still get those jobs. Yeah. There's still a commitment there, which is really important.
Well, that's kind of cool, and it's about time. You know, those guys are a little bit short on SUVs, and it's going to see how this works, because for years, you know, the Asian manufacturers made these great cars, and it seems like when it goes to SUVs and trucks, it was always the U.S. manufacturers, and now it's all kind of going over to SUVs and trucks, and so let's kind of see how that works. I mean, now they're in our territory here. Everybody makes a great vehicle. You know, luckily, nobody makes something bad right now. Now, I hear that Genesis, speaking of SUVs, you know, they've been struggling to build an awesome car, but not everybody wants cars, like we just said. So they're coming out with an SUV, we hope.
Yeah, so there's always been the plan to have the vehicles, the cars launch first and then go into SUVs. And they launched the G90, then the G80, and the G70, which won the Noctway Car of the Year. The G70 is a great vehicle,
though.
Yes,
it really is.
You know, the sister vehicle to the Kia Stinger. I like the G70 better personally myself.
Of course, it's really nice.
Yeah, so what we're seeing is that Genesis has confirmed that they are going to be building a three-row SUV, which we kind of knew, but we have the timing nailed down. It's coming in May 2020. And they're going to launch a smaller version later that year. So that probably means we're getting the three row first and then a two rows smaller version of that, probably a large SUV or what we consider a midsize SUV, and then the compact / subcompact.
What do you think? You think it might be a cousin of a Palisades? Maybe they use the Palisades as the Telluride as maybe a guide?
Oh, absolutely. Like absolutely. So we were just in the Palisade, and I know you were impressed, and I was impressed with how upscale the Palisade is. It's really well executed. And if you think of what Genesis does, they charge a little bit more for a lot more luxury.
Yeah, they sure do. And, you know, I guess they're hamstrung because they don't have enough vehicles. Every Genesis dealer I talk to seems like, I need more vehicles. I need more cars and I need SUVs. Well, they're listening.
Right, right. And not only that, but Genesis needed more dealerships.
Yeah,
and that was a huge obstacle. And they're starting to remedy that a little bit. And they're really starting to come into their own as a brand. They're celebrating six straight months of sales gains.
Okay,
haven't been around 6 years. But yeah, they're really growing. It's easy to see why once you drive their vehicles. It's easy to understand why it makes sense to spend $50,000 to $60,000 on a luxury car as opposed to $70,000, $80,000. If you haven't been to Genesis, I recommend going to the dealership and driving one. It's a really, really solid vehicle.
Yeah, they are. A friend of mine's a Genesis dealer, and every customer that buys them is just going, wow, I wish the thing had been around. I didn't really know what happened. And that's part of the issue. Okay, do you buy one if you live somewhere there's not a dealer near you? So that's going to hold them back a little bit. And it's a shame because they build a very nice vehicle. They really do. And if they come out with some SUVs, that's really going to bump them up a lot.
It's going to be really, really competitive. And I think it's going to compete with, you know, Lexus RX. We're going to see that. And that segment is really hot right now. But also there's some really good competition there. And it's wide ranging in price. So to come in with a $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 SUV,
right,
that's going to compete against other $70,000, $80,000,
$90,000 SUVs. It's a much
better deal. Genesis can really knock their socks off, like they did when they made a big splash into the sedan market.
Yeah, no kidding. And also, you know, The warranty is a big deal, and it's so much cheaper. Now, speaking of SUVs and things like that, there's some stuff about Honda and some other Honda news, isn't there?
There is. So I don't know if you saw it, but there was this Honda e vehicle that they debuted for Europe, and it's really kind of
the real cool looking one.
It's cute. It's cute. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of a Volkswagen Rabbit a little
cool,
bit.
Cute, but it definitely reminds me of the robot. Remember the robot?
Asmo.
Yeah.
It's quirky. Yeah. It's fun. You know,
yeah, it really
like
is.
I want to go drive it. Like I was like, I need to plan a trip to England so I can go drive this thing.
Yes.
But that is kind not coming to the U.S.
Uh-oh.
Unfortunately, but we're going to have some made for the US electric vehicle architecture that's going to come, they're saying, before 2025, which probably means the LA Auto Show at the end of November, early December in 2024.
Well, you know,
but
that's okay because I don't think battery technology is going to be where we need it right now. It's great if you want to. Right now, where EVs are, in my opinion, is that they're great for around town cars and around that kind of stuff, or maybe a short little trip. So like if I'm in Houston, I can go to Galveston and come back. But I can't go from Houston to Dallas. If I did make it for some strange way, I made it to 250 or 260 miles, my battery would be dead. I've got to sit there for 8 hours or 6 hours. If we can fix that, okay, that'll make an electric car all of a sudden viable.
Right, and I think you use the parallel a lot between Houston and Dallas, and that's like a three-hour drive.
Yes,
but,
3.5, yeah.
Yeah, I think that being from L.A. to San Francisco or even New York to Chicago, I think those are really good distances people want to be able to go on a single charge.
Right.
And you don't want to have to wait 2 days to charge it back
that's
after
the other
that.
Thing. Yeah, you make it there on a single charge, great, but when you get there, you're stuck. You have range anxiety right then. If you could go and get another 200 miles or whatever in an hour, or 300 miles in an hour, that'll be good. And I know it's coming. I really do. And they probably have the technology right now. It's just too expensive.
Right. So, it's a huge expenditure for companies to get into the EV market and to commit to the battery vehicles as
absolutely.
They are. But and we're seeing a range of suppliers that they're going to use for these batteries, including Panasonic and CATL. And by using those, they're able to diversify where they're getting stock from, which is something that other manufacturers aren't necessarily doing. So that is also an important. It seems like they're being very strategic about it. Which makes sense. Now, these vehicles that they're bringing over, the platform for the U.S. is fixed for the battery width, but it will allow differences for the vehicle width, kind of like a modern platform does anyway. We talked about that with the Ford Explorer, with the hybrid battery pack. It was built with that. But it's going to have different vehicle widths, seat positions, wheel size, ground clearance. All of that will be able to change. That's for North America and China. Honda has the goal of electrifying two-thirds of its global lineup by 2030 and achieving 100% electrification across all of its European offerings by 2025. But you have to remember, electrification doesn't mean electric vehicles.
Right.
It can mean hybrids.
Absolutely. And I think hybrid, I remember when Chevy came out with the Volt, with a V, okay? And yeah, you can go 25, 30 miles on your battery, and then the gasoline motor comes in and runs the wheels until you can get somewhere and charge the battery up. That would be great. Now, but it didn't charge the battery. I wish it did, but it ran the wheels. It didn't charge the battery.
Right.
That was such a great idea, and it was a great vehicle. I really liked them because I made a trip, 250, 300-mile trip, and sure, the first 25 was on the battery. The rest of it was on the little one-liter engine, you know, basically a generator. But I think that's coming. We're just so close, guys. It's so close to making this really help us.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a ton of value with a hybrid and a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. It's just a matter of getting the cost down of them to be truly competitive with the internal combustion engine vehicles. Right. And that's the biggest obstacle right now.
Well, I also read some the other day, we're not going to bring it up. We thought we'd maybe talk about it next week. One of the companies came out with a new platform that has all the drive system and everything in the wheels. So it's a flat platform, which is what Volkswagen has.
Yeah, the Volkswagen MEB platform is
a really neat setup.
Yeah, they've done a heck of a job. I attended a conference they did at the Chicago Auto Show this year in February, really learning in depth about that platform and where they intend to take it. And they are being very strategic and very smart about it. When they talk about it, you can really see the innovation. Yeah. But it's important to remember, they set these goals. They say by 2025.
Yeah.
But it's maybe by 2025. We're seeing a lot of people miss those goals, but it's also about consumer adoption and where they're going from there.
Even though they may have the technology and everything else, that doesn't mean we can afford it. So they've got to get the price down. So it's got to be both. And I think right now the internal combustion engine isn't dead yet with the new variable valve timing and duration from Hyundai, the new HCCI engine, which is the Skyactiv X from Mazda, and the new variable compression Infiniti and Nissan's. I mean, those engines are going to help. It just helps with emissions, help with fuel economy. Boy, just think happened if you paired that with a battery, you know, make it into a hybrid. Just like I always thought for years, a little diesel that gets a gazillion miles a gallon and a hybrid would be the perfect companions.
There's some really interesting technology. I was looking at something, and I'm going to say I linked to it on Twitter, and I completely forgot who it is, but there's a tire manufacturer that's showing off a tire that you can actually charge by running. It's got some sort of charging within the tire tread itself.
Right.
And that's interesting.
It's always static electricity when on the tires.
Right. Yeah. And I know I went over, now it's not a great example, but when I was with Kia earlier this year in Georgia, we went over a solar road that you can actually drive over, and there's solar panels in the road, and that helps charge things. But that's technology that isn't really taking off because it's not quite where it needs to be. It's experimental, but it's fun to have all those experiments out there to see how they work in reality and honestly to let them fail if they're not worthy.
Yeah, sure. That's how you learn, is by failing. You know, I fail plenty of times. But you know what? We get up and we keep going. All right, what else we got real quick?
Well, one of the things you don't want to fail are your tires. And Pirelli is adding to their range of all-season tires with a new Scorpion Verde All-Season Plus 2, which sounds very, very exciting. And it is a tire specifically for the North American market, specifically for SUVs, crossovers, and trucks.
Is it kind of M&S or Mud and Snow or multi-traction or whatever? Is it more of a street tire or is it more of an off-road tire?
So it seems like it's an all-season sort of tire, all-over tire. So it's a new compound with overall performance in wet and dry conditions, handling. They say it does well with mileage and comfort and noise and winter performance. They're all improvements over the last generation.
Sure.
So they're always going to say that when they come up with the next generation,
trade-off.
Right?
Is it good on-road or is it off-road? And then, okay, you get a good off-road. Will the tread wear, is it good or not? And worst of all, is it noisy? I mean, everybody's been next to a big truck with big mud grips, and they're making that roaring sound that you can't even listen to the radio. It's so bad. And some of them are actually great, and they're getting better every day.
Right, and they talk a lot about, in their press release, about this being a high-performance tire, being a low-noise tire, excellent handling. So it sounds like an everyday tire for the everyday customer. It'll come in 32 sizes. They're going to have a 40-size range available by September, and it comes with a 65,000-mile limited treadwear warranty, which is a great warranty.
65,000. See, they've obviously put some different compounds in there. It's kind of like I was learning about compounds and how as the tire wears, the compounds change. They're a different compound when you first get it, and then when it gets to be 25 or 30,000 miles, gets a few millimeters of wear, all of a sudden it's got a different compound. It's really cool. And they even have different compounds for different parts of the tire. I mean, tire construction is like really, really high-tech stuff nowadays. But it's really great. All right, now we're running out of time. We're here, folks. We're here at the Nissan Versa launch here in Nashville, Tennessee. We're here outside of, kind of outside the hotel in a little hideaway room. So if you hear a little noise here, people going past us, we're actually everybody's watching us here, and it's been kind of cool.
It's been interesting to see their faces as they walk by trying to figure out what we're doing.
Yeah, what in the hell are these people doing over here? All right, folks, we have a lot more that's happening. I tell you, this has been great. Okay, now we've got our car reviews. Eileen, what are you driving today?
So I had the 2019 Jaguar F-Pace SV SVR.
Oh, I had an SVR too. We'll talk about mine after yours.
Yeah, so I had this week the SVR, which is kind of their high performance SUV for Jaguar right now. It's a compact SUV. It sits above the E-Pace, which is their subcompact, and it's kind of above everything else in the Jaguar lineup right now. There's nothing bigger than it, but it's still a compact. It still seats five pretty well. It's an interesting vehicle. It's a lot of fun to drive, for sure. It's got 550 horsepower. It's got a 5-liter supercharged V8 gas engine that has the most perfect, lovely rumble.
Oh, doesn't it?
Oh, it sounds so pretty. It sounds so pretty.
Does it have the button where you can turn it on and off?
It might.
All I know is
it was on.
That was
it was on. Oh. It was never off. Oh,
I would
My
never
neighbors
turn it
weren't
off.
Happy.
But I would never turn it off. They sound so good.
It does. It sounds really good. It sounds really good. So the SVR trim is new for 2019. There's a bunch of new standard features on the F-Pace, and it get a larger standard touchscreen and all sorts of other stuff. To make the F-Pace a little bit more relevant, they are selling that like gangbusters the last few years. Last year they dropped off a little bit, but this year they're giving you something more, something extra, and the SVR trim certainly is a bit extra, but it's great on the outside. I mean, the F-Pace is a good looking vehicle. On the inside, though, it has a bit of an outdated interior already. It's not the nicest appointments. It is luxury level, but it's not outstanding. I was fine with it because I like the roar of the engine.
It's hard to keep up with pickup trucks nowadays when it comes to luxury interiors.
Yeah, I mean, if Ram could do every interior, I think we'd all be in good shape.
Yeah,
but right. But they don't for this. And I think that's kind of my biggest gripe with this F-Pace SVR was that it just wasn't as nice inside as I would like. There was, you know, a few quibbles I have, mainly with the infotainment system, which though I knew how to use it, I still wasn't thrilled with it. I like scrolling through the radio stations. I mean, I have all my presets, but I still like hearing what's on all the different stations. That's kind of my thing. And when you scroll through, you have to do it on the screen. So you're kind of balancing your thumb and your finger at the same time. And there's this edge around the screen that's this metal kind of bezel. And it's sharp. It's not easy. It's kind of squared off, and your thumb or your finger ends up resting on that to then scroll through. And that just, you know, it's uncomfortable. It's one of those things I wasn't thrilled with. Could I live with it? Yes. Do I have to? I'd prefer not to. But other than that, I really like the Jaguar F-Pace. It's really engaging to drive. It's fun to be in. It's easy to understand why people buy them. It's not my favorite luxury compact SUV, but it's up there. I mean, I really enjoyed my time behind the wheel. Now, it is a little pricey.
Okay, I was just going to ask, what do you mean by a little pricey?
I mean,
they're beautiful vehicles. Oh my gosh, they're pretty.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So it starts at
$80,600. Oh.
You're paying for the engine, let's be honest. Yeah. You're paying for
you're paying
the
for
engine.
The name.
Yeah, and the SVR.
Jaguar.
Yeah,
also.
The Jaguar. And a top speed of 176 miles per hour.
It's governed at 176.
Yeah, yeah.
You knock the governor off, it'll go faster.
I will say I did not go 176. I did not try the limit in it. But I don't think I would pay the $8,600 for it. At $70,000 and $65,000, I'd be okay with it. To get to the $80,000 is a big leap for me. And I'll say that because of the interior, because I didn't feel like it was as nice as some of the interiors in the other luxury compact
SUVs.
But,
you know, the people in Europe, they like stiff seats and hard seats, and they like a different interior than the U.S. buyer.
But I will say this. I didn't feel like it was stiffed. I didn't. I was comfortable in it, and I was perfectly happy in it, but it didn't feel like $80,000.
There you go. Okay.
And that's the thing. Granted, the Volvo isn't as engaging, but when you have a Volvo XC90, and you see what they're giving you for $50,000, and then you're like, I've got to pay $20,000.
This is also sticker. You know, and these guys are known for not being able to go with sticker, but still, it's still more than it ought to be.
But, man, that F-Pace SVR, I would be happy. It came in this blue color that was like a shock of electric blue.
Mine was too. My SVR was blue.
And I don't think I would normally go for that color, but after, you know, I really like being able to find
it. Striking blue.
It was. I liked being able to find it in the parking lot. It was very easy to find. But then I also feared when I was driving on the highway that I was going to be very easily detectable by the
It was estrol blue.
Yes.
E-S-T-R-O-L O-R-I-L. Yeah. Estril blue.
Yeah, it's an interesting blue. But like I said, it's not one I would order if I was looking online, but definitely one that caught my eye. I like it. I might buy a vehicle in that color if I was going with the F-Pace. It looks sharp.
Well, sure looks good with the black trim and stuff.
Yeah, right? It really does. You know, it's a looker.
Oh, we're going to talk about that one I had.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, all right.
Now, yeah, go ahead. Go tell us about yours.
Who would buy this car?
Who would buy the F? Well, somebody with money to spend, that's okay. For sure.
I think like an upwardly mobile, you know.
I think you could probably put people in it, you know, 25 to 55.
Metrosexual type thing?
No. I think this is going to be somebody who's got a family. Somebody who, right. who, you know, I need an SUV for my family, but I want to have some fun.
And want something
sexy. Yeah, I want a Jag. Yeah. I want something that sounds exciting. You know, it's a fun vehicle. You know,
yeah,
a lot of people are willing to pay a lot more for performance. And I think you're seeing that with this vehicle, the way it's priced. And they're still comfortable and they're still able to get around. It's a sexy looking vehicle. You're still going to your JLR dealership. So you're with your Land Rovers and all of
and
that.
And you're still getting the dealer to kind of cuddle you and they just do everything for you. That's it's a great dealer network.
Right, you're getting a good luxury experience. Yep. So I think that's who's going to buy the F-Pace SVR.
Okay, now, all right. I, on the other hand, was driving the Land Rover Range Rover Sport SVR.
That's a very short name. I'm glad they shortened that up for this year.
We need to probably initialize this. And it was the 2020 model, and it has basically not changed much, but the base price of a mere $114,000.
Oh, that's
mine
all?
Was loaded with goodies.
Oh.
Okay. This one is just, it has the beautiful, sweet sounding 575 horsepower V8 with the open exhaust that you can push this button and the sport mode comes on and all of a sudden the exhaust gets to a loud rumble and it sounds so good when you're going under an underpass and you accelerate.
Oh my gosh.
It sounds so good. That's the problem. I had a real problem with that.
Why? Because you liked it too much?
It has a Meridian 1700 watt sound system.
Everyone needs 1700 watts of sound.
Not
clearly.
Just 60, people go, I have a 950 watt sound system. This is a 1700. I mean, blood comes out of your ears and everything.
I think you could probably shake the dirt off your car if you turned up the stereo loud.
You're absolutely right. Okay. But that was a mere $4,500 upgrade.
Oh, that's it?
Then it had this 5-spoke wheels where they're black and they're real sexy looking for 22 inch. And they're that's a $3,080 upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had the heads-up display, which I'm not a big heads-up display fan. That's a mere $1,500. Then it has the soft door closing action. So when you close the door, it kind of pulls itself up. That's nice. That's $610.
That's not bad.
And then the Estoni blue color. The color is a $1,325 upgrade. It has more goodies. And something I notice also, shipping has gone up.
Yes.
It's gone from, usually it's $9.95 or $7.95. Mm-hmm. This one was $13.25. But all in all, some other goodies it had on it, it came out to $131,520.
For a subcompact SUV.
No, this is actually more of a, almost a full size. It's the same size as Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Okay.
It's a big SUV.
Mm-hmm.
So, you could almost call it full size, but this is a big SUV. You know, and they haven't changed it much, so it kind of looks pretty much the same, but it's got this blacked out trim and these big black wheels and this engine and these kind of like square looking exhaust pipes. It looks mean and it's got huge wide tires, 22 inch wheels, but really wide, probably 8 or 10 inch wide tires. Looks like you're looking at something in a Hellcat. Okay.
Did you feel like a celebrity driving it? I feel like you should feel like you should be like rich and powerful driving it.
I'm not like
it.
A Kardashian like you would be, but you know, I'm trying. No, I'm just kidding. No, it was really fun. Now, I'll be honest with you though, the people that are going to look at this one would be looking at a Jeep Grand Cherokee SRT. I don't think there's another high performance luxury SUV out there.
What did you get for fuel economy on this?
Oh, we don't want to talk about that.
No,
we don't want to talk about that.
Because I know,
economy.
So you're looking at the Jeep Grand Cherokee Trackhawk as being similar. And that has, you know, 700 horsepower. That thing's a beast. And it gets 11 miles to the gallon when I tested it, which was, you know, a hard pill to swallow. But man, was that exhaust good as well.
It was great. This one, I think I got 15.9.
Okay, so better.
That's not horrible.
That's not bad.
But now you go to the Jeep Grand Cherokee SRT, which is just a little few. This is 575. I think the Grand Cherokee is like 475 or 500.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit better. But, you know, the trick is I have my foot in it all the time. That's a problem. On the highway, it was great. I mean, it was so.
But how was it at low speed? Like pulling out of your neighborhood, how was it?
Awesome.
It was still good. There wasn't a lot of...
Like I said, I still had the dilemma of, do I listen to the awesome exhaust system or do I listen to the really cool stereo? I was like, so I do both. But it was so much fun. When you punch it, It has this deep, deep roar. You know, because this thing is a big V8, twin cam V8, 8-speed transmission. It's 176 miles an hour. It's limited, and it gets there so freaking fast. It'll pin you to the seat. It is really fine. But, you know, here's the deal. It's still off-road capable. It's not like they blew all that off. These guys are still as off-road capable. The only thing that would hold it back is it had the tires were a little bit more street tires than they were off-road tires. And that's just your tire choice. That's not a big deal.
That's one of the things I like about Land Rover is they aren't willing to compromise on their off-road capability, no matter what vehicle you have in their lineup. And that's really their hallmark. It's what they're good at. Yep. And I think that's a really, really awesome selling feature.
It is. And it's just like Jeep, same way. You have, okay, you can be as need a cool hot rod on the street, but you're still going to be able to take it off-road. And it had the dual range. It had all the little controls where you can go, all the different modes for driving off-road and everything else, but also had on-road track driving. It has a little picture of a helmet, you know.
You didn't take it on the track, though, did you?
No, but I got it onto a track where I could go. I think I went 160, and it got to 160 really fast.
Okay.
So that was really cool. There's a lot of room for people in cargo. It's basically about the size. Think of a Jeep Grand Cherokee. It's about that same size.
Yeah, so it's a midsize. It's comparable with like the Audi Q7 and the Porsche Cayenne. Right.
It's between midsize and full size. Some people would call it full size. Some people call it midsize. And it's just great. If you're looking for a performance luxury SUV with a Jeep Grand Cherokee or SRT or something like that, you've got to look at this. But also, this one has all the safety features. That has all it had all the goodies that anything else would have. It has all the safety. It's all the lane divergence. All of the everything. It's just. So they loaded it up. It's pretty high tech. The screens are really nice.
You had the two 10-inch touch screens?
Yeah, but also this thing is just like the Evoque in the fact that I can push the button and move the screen.
Right.
And, you know, so there are times when I'm looking at these screens and they're really great. I glance at them and the sun maybe catch them just right. And I just, there's a little glare and everything. But I can move it 10 or 15 degrees. It's gone. It's fine. Or somebody's taller or shorter and this kind of stuff, you can look at the screen. That is, why can't everybody do that? I mean, these guys did it. They're not rocket scientists. Everybody else ought to be able to do it. But these guys have actually led the way. But it's a great vehicle. Yeah.
Did you get to try the Land Rover Activity Key with yours?
No, I did not. I just had the one key.
Okay. The Activity Key is a waterproof wristband. Right. That lets you unlock your vehicle from your wristband, which is kind of like reminds me of sci-fi stuff.
They do have the app that I didn't download that lets you do all kinds of start the car and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it had heated and cooled, comfortable seats too. Had all the different thigh support and all. It's very, very comfortable interior. Much more comfortable than the other vehicle that I'm driving this week, which cost almost as much. We'll talk about that next week. We'll talk about the SUV I'm driving this week. But, folks, if you're looking for an SRT, you want a hot, you know, SUV that's really stupid fast, that's going to run away from a Mustang or a Camaro or most of the Challengers, you need to look at the Range Rover Sport SVR because it's really a nice vehicle. It is a little pricey, though. So for people that are going to buy this thing, have this kind of money, or actually what you're probably going to find is people are going to lease this thing. I bet you the leasing deals are pretty decent.
Well, and if you don't want something that's as off-road capable, take a look at the 2019 Jaguar F-Pace SVR. Yeah, it's about the exact same size, a little bit bigger cargo space, and it's just as fun.
All right. Now, we have a lot of more stuff coming in. Let's talk about some car questions. Let's talk about that. We've got a couple of things we have here. And, you know, folks, I listen to car questions. I mean, I read the car questions off to you. And we'll answer them every week. And you guys have emailed them to info@letstalkwheels.com. Always go to the website, and you can see Contact Mike, and I'll answer all your car questions. I've been doing this for a million years. And we've got Bob says...
I see that. Bob says, my mechanic says I have a refrigerant leak fixed. I have to have a refrigerant leak fixed before he can legally recharge my air conditioner. I know it's hot outside. People have questions about their air conditioners failing. Is it true that he has to have it fixed? If it is, Bob says he's been breaking the law for years, and now he's concerned about it.
Well, there's kind of a sticky thing here, and what the tech says is kind of true, because under the law, the technician, who is a professional repair person, okay, must be certified by Article 609 of the EPA to repair HVAC systems for money. Okay, it's not like you're Fred from down the street doing it. Okay, he cannot intentionally vent refrigerant into the atmosphere. We have to buy a $3,000 machine to recover all the refrigerant and all that stuff. Most of the people that just do it for fun don't ever do that. But if he knows you have a leak, he's actually venting it to the atmosphere. So technically, he would be breaking the law. And it's really actually the independent shops policy. And certain cities, actually some certain states have different laws. California, obviously, is going to be really tough on it. Some of the other states may not be. You know, a lot of shops, if they know you have a tiny, tiny leak and they really can't find it, they'll put some dye, refrigerant dye in it so they can find out where the leak is. And they'll see in a few months and try to fix the leak. But honestly, you want to keep doing that because every time you lose refrigerant, you lose oil in your system and you're going to burn up your compressor. So you definitely want to do that. All right, now we've got Mickey. What is he saying?
Mickey says he wants to know if adding a cat-back exhaust system will void the warranty on his Charger RT. And is there an advantage of using the Mopar system?
Well, actually, most of the cat-back systems shouldn't really void the warranty. But if you really want to be careful, use the Mopar system because it's one of the best ones out there. It's priced about the same. You can get the dealer to put it on for you. A lot of times, even if you're buying it, the car, they'll sometimes put it on for free, the labor free. And there's a great advanced system because this thing bolts right on because it's made by the company that built the car. Also, it has a warranty even on those parts. So you don't have, like I'm buying this cat bag exhaust system from, you know, Fred's Automotive and, you know, on eBay, and you get it and it's got a 1-year warranty. Well, if you get it from Mopar, it's got the 3-year, 36,000 mile, just like the vehicle.
Right, and it is always important to make sure that any mods you do to your car do not void the warranty. That is one thing it's better to be safe than sorry with. And if you have to consult your local dealership, don't be afraid to do it and ask them because they will give you the answer. And if you can, get that answer in writing.
Okay.
So the next question comes from Jim, who has a 2012 BMW. He was going to check the transmission fluid and found out there is no dipstick. How does he change or flush the fluid out? Can he do this? Is it only BMW? What's the real issue here?
Well, you know, that's the problem. A lot of these new vehicles have no dipstick. You know, Camry, Toyota, Toyota Camry's done that for years. And that they tell you also that, by the way, the fluid lasts a lifetime. I think they want to sell you a $6,000 or $7,000 transmission more than anything else. So fluid does not last a lifetime. If I got to be 60,000-75,000 miles, I would change the fluid and I would flush it out and do that. If you take it to the dealer, they have a special tool or any of these independent shops that'll do flushes. You know, whether it's Bob's Lube Center or whoever, any of those guys will have their own special tool they will have bought it to check the levels. I mean, for example, even my son's old 2006 Explorer he drives every once in a while, it has a deal, has no dipstick either. You have to fill it up, you have to add this special tool, and you fill up the fluid to a certain level till it runs out, then you topped it off. And I know it's a pain. I don't know why these companies are doing this. It can't save them $2 by not putting a dipstick in. I don't know. But the fact that they say that the transmission fluid lasts forever is wrong. Especially if you've ever overheated it or anything like that. That'll cut the life of the fluid in half if you ever overheat the transmission. So, folks, if you're towing or anything like that, be sure. I don't care what you're driving. Change the fluid. If the manufacturer says you don't have to, that's because they want to sell you a transmission. I mean, I hate to be pessimistic like that, but, guys, it's... you don't want to do that. All right, what's next?
So Lynn writes that she has a F-150 crew cab truck, and the driver's side power window is giving her the blues. It goes down just fine, but it has problems coming back up. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I know people who have that problem growing up with their windows.
Yes.
Is it the switch or is it the motor? What is it? Ford wants $88 at the dealership just for a diagnosis. Is it worth her time and expense? Is it not? Does she just throw the car away and get a new car? What should Lynn do?
No, actually, it's usually just a switch. All the switch does is reverse polarity on the motor. So a lot of times if you just kind of wiggle it a little bit and all of a sudden you'll hear it doing. Now, if it's trying to come up and it's struggling, then it's the run channel that you need to put some silicone lube in it. But if it doesn't do anything and you just wiggle the switch and all of a sudden it'll work. You know, I used to be able to take the switches out, which is real easy to do. And I would take them apart and use a pencil eraser and clean the contacts, put it back together, and it would last another 5 years.
So does that change with weather, though? Are people who live in a colder environment
sometimes,
more susceptible to that?
Sometimes it will, because the plastic will expand and contract. But most of the time, it's just the fact that the contacts are dirty on the switch. Like I said, the switch is not magic. It's just one way it turns the voltage one direction, and then it reverses polarity to bring it down. So it's not a simple... And even though the switch might be $30, but I kind of like being able to clean the original one, you know. It's not hard, and most guys can do it. I bet you there's a YouTube video on how to do it.
There probably is. We all know, though, people don't necessarily like watching the YouTube videos and doing their own work.
Yeah.
But, you know, you might as well try it if you can.
There you go. If not, go to the dealer and pick up a Switch. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go with Robert. Robert has a mother, an 84-year-old mother with a 2012 Ford Escape. It has 16,000 miles on it. It runs great. However, when he changed the oil, he found traces of what looks like coolant in the oil cap. Yet the coolant level is full. What is going on?
Well, here's the problem. She makes obviously a lot of short trips.
Right. There's only 16,000 miles on it after 6 years.
Right. And I've seen them with 3,000 miles after 6 years, 7 years. But she makes some short trips, and that's cool. Maybe go to church, go to the store, this kind of stuff. Well, the trick is that the engine never heats up the oil to operating temperature, which the PCV system steams out all the impurities and all the products of combustion and things like that.
What is the PCV system?
The crankcase ventilation system.
Okay.
And what that does, I'm glad you answered that. And so the problem is, you'll notice if you open up the oil filter cap, you'll see this kind of milky substance on that. And it's basically condensation. That's all it is. And the engine never gets rid of it. So you've got to change the oil a lot more often. I remember the days when my grandmother was driving, cars back in the 70s. And my dad would say, here, throw me the keys. Go, look, take this thing about 30 miles down the road, down the freeway, and turn around and come back.
So what are some tips for people who have maybe older parents or they just aren't driving their car that much to keep the fluids rolling, to keep it moving? I always heard about, your tires getting dead spots or things like that. What should people be doing to make sure their cars are in proper working order for their parents or even just their friends?
Well, you need to change the oil mark. If you've got a vehicle that doesn't get driven much, you want to make sure that the tires get replaced every 8 to 9 years, even if they look brand new, because tires will fail. After 8 years, you're really on borrowed time. The tire manufacturers say you need to change them. I don't care if they look new. The properties of the tire will start to fail and things like that. You don't want to worry about that. You want to change your fluids a lot more often. Sometimes you'll change the fluids by maybe I would do it twice a year. I would change your oil twice a year. I don't care if she only goes 500 miles. Change the oil twice a year. Now, the other thing is borrow the car and take it on a trip. Take it, go a couple hundred miles and come back, I hate to say lend it to the grandkids, but that's pretty dangerous.
I think it's a great opportunity. You go get your oil change across town, 50, 60 miles away.
Yep.
That puts the miles on the car. That gets your oil change, right. Everything moving, and then it's good to go.
It'll get rid of the contaminants, which is the byproducts of combustions. There's a lot of acids or a lot of moisture in the system. I mean, that oil is just, it's just nasty. So you've got to clean it out. Even the people go, well, I've only been 5,000. I mean, I know a guy that changed it every 2 or 3 years. You can't, and the engine blew up later on. It only had like 25,000 miles, and it was 18 years old. But they won't hold up, and people think, I'm going to get a low-mileage car. You're almost better with a higher-mileage car because the things fail by time, as anything else. We're talking about, there's another question here about a person with oil leaks. For example, when you have a Honda, Hondas are famous for holding up for a long, long time. But every 8 years, you're going to have a valve cover gasket leaking, oil pan gasket leaking, front main seal leaking, the rear main seal, the cam seals, all the seals, the rubber stuff. The rubber goes bad every 8 years. When I was a Honda guy, Honda tech, I would just tell the customer, look, the engine outlives the seals and gaskets. Let me replace these gaskets and all the different seals, and you're good for another 8 or 9 years. And sure enough, they would do that. No problem. It's just, the metal and all the engine compartments are great, but the rubber seals just don't last. And if you drive them less, it's worse.
So we're talking about cars getting older. So what is the difference between an antique and a classic car?
Usually,
are you an antique and I'm a classic at this point?
Pre-war and after the war. And
you're definitely an antique.
I'm definitely an antique. Wait a minute. Come on.
And I have to get them in when I can.
What's hard to find is what, what people are talking about is, what's going to happen? What's going to be a good car in the future? Yeah.
Right. What, so the future cool classics,
yeah,
right?
Future classics.
Maybe I'm a future classic.
There you are. That's what you
yeah,
are.
You're yeah. Definitely I'm under 40 classic. Still, so a future yeah. classic.
We'll need to bring that up in the next couple shows about future classics and things like that. All right. Now.
So Subaru has put the Outback on their new global platform, which underpins the Ascent and the Forester and all of that. That allows it to have be a bigger vehicle, a slightly right. bigger vehicle. It's not too big, but way more stability, much, much more safe, and really just an overall better drive experience okay. for the consumer.
Because they're getting bigger. They're getting into a different class. They're up against different vehicles now. They used to be tiny little cars that were cool because they were all-wheel drive.
Well, and they all were cars reliable. Are growing, though, yeah. in size,
I know,
right?
You're right.
And but they keep the all-wheel drive. All-wheel drive is standard for the Outback.
Except all of them except for one of them, right? Except for the little coupe.
So the performance vehicles.
Right.
Yeah, so those are. But for the Outback and the Ascent and the Crosstrek and the Forester, those all have standard all-wheel drive. So you do lose an inch of headroom in the new Outback, but it has the same amount of headroom as is in the new 2019 Forester.
Okay.
So you're not really missing out on a bunch.
Which one's the biggest?
Ascent. The Ascent, yeah,
okay.
that's
then,
their three
then
row.
Comes down, the next size would be?
The next is the Forester.
Forester.
And then you have Crosstrek below that. The Outback is kind of a unique wagon.
Okay.
It sits there in an interesting spot. It's more in tune with the Legacy, which I'll actually be driving next
right.
month. But it's a different type of vehicle, right? It competes
right.
with the Ford Edge. It competes with the Jeep Grand Cherokee for consumers. But it's a wagon. And,
right.
you know, they're selling a ton of them. And it's easy to see why. With this new generation, it still has the 8.7 inches of ground clearance, which
right.
is great, even though it has that cladding on the
yeah.
bottom. And this one, they took the engine out of the Ascent and the engine out of the Forester and made those two the engines that are in the new Outback. So you have a 2.5-liter four-cylinder boxer engine.
Yeah, that's a good engine.
It's good,
it's
but
not
it's,
a rocket
it's not, yeah.
not rocket ship, but it's real reliable.
It is, and, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's paired with a CVT, which I know you're not care for.
I know, but some of these engines, the way they set the timing up, they have to go with a CVT. There's no other way they can do it. It puts too much of a load on the engine.
Right, and so this one has a little bit of the rubber banding. You know, it's great for
yeah.
around town. If you're not going to be hauling anything, it's a perfectly fine engine. But the one I love.
Uh-huh.
Was the turbocharged 2.4-liter four-cylinder.
Wow.
That's what was in the Ascent. Now, the Ascent is much heavier than the Outback, but they moved that same engine into the Outback. It's got 260 horsepower,
uh-huh.
277 pound-feet of torque.
Okay.
It is zippy. It's a perfectly fine engine. I really, really liked it. I had a lot of fun in it. It was easily able to go up California 1 through the winding roads.
2.5. Naturally aspirated or 2.4 turbo.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the 2.4-liter turbocharged engine is also paired with a CVT, but it's a different CVT.
Yeah.
This one is made for this engine. It has
well,
a higher...
Well, with the turbo, it's going to have a different gearing inside. Yeah.
Right. So the higher final gear ratio, it's also meant for better fuel economy. Now, the fuel economy estimates on this vehicle are fantastic. The base engine gets 26 mpg highway... I'm sorry, in the city, 33 mpg on the highway.
Wow.
Turbocharged gets 2330, which is fantastic.
Right.
Both
and it's a lot faster.
Right. And both models have over 600 miles of range. We don't usually talk about range when it comes to electric vehicles with
yeah.
internal combustion engines, but 600 miles of range out of your vehicle is pretty good. You can get pretty far into the forest.
Well, not just that. There are times that I'm driving and I look down and went, oh my God, these towns have the fuel, you know, the gas prices are 25-30 cents a gallon. If I could just make it to the next bigger town, I'll be able to get something cheap again. And all of a sudden, now you have the range to do that.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And the money you're saving there, they're actually putting into, you can get a higher trim level. And the higher trim levels have this soft Napa leather that
uh-huh.
is so nice. It's just like in the Ascent. And they've really upped all of the appointments in the cabin. You look at it and you're like, this is not the Outback it used to be.
Yeah.
This is a near premium vehicle. I mean, they've done a heck of a job
yeah.
with it, especially so when it comes to the infotainment system. Now, the base model infotainment system has 2 7-inch screens. It's not really that attractive. It's one for audio,
but
one for climate.
Model.
It's the base model.
Okay.
Most people aren't getting that. Most people are getting the available 11.6-inch head unit,
uh-huh.
and that is a big tablet-sized screen. And you think, okay, the Subaru customer, maybe not that usually tech-savvy, but you know what? It's easy to use. It's
right.
super easy to use. It's got
simple is good when it comes to this.
Yeah, it's got physical buttons too, so
uh-huh.
you can use buttons to adjust the temperature. You can do on off. You can do the seek with the radio with a button.
Right.
Those important things that you would normally wish you had a button for on some of these other.
How about
screens.
CarPlay and iTunes?
Yeah, so it does have Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, and a rear-view camera that are all standard.
Okay.
You can get it with X mode, which is the off-roading, the torque vectoring technology.
Okay, that's cool.
It also has additional controls. It has a forward-facing camera in the Onyx edition.
Cool.
The Onyx edition is this new blacked-out edition of the Subaru Outback. And you're like, why would they make that? Well, you know what?
For somebody like you, because you'd love it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it looks great. But the Forester Sport, which is kind of their new age version of the Forester, is selling like gangbusters. They're selling so many more of them than they thought they would.
All right.
So this Onyx edition is a completely new take on the Forester that gives them kind of those same details that you're getting with this Forester Sport, takes it to a whole different level. And honestly, what I gathered by talking to them is they're trying some things out to see if that's what customers want for the next generation, which we know it takes them about 5 years to do the next gen. They're in a 6-year product cycle. So next year they're going to start on the next generation for Outback. So they're taking this information. Now that Onyx edition also has some really interesting things. It also has the 180 degree front view monitor. That's the camera I was telling you about.
All right.
A full size spare tire. Which is important.
Well,
you don't get a lot of that.
If you're doing any kind of off-roading at all, first thing you do, as we know from where we're at our Texas Off-Road Invitational, you can easy to puncture a tire.
Oh, absolutely.
And you've got to go over there and change it. And to have a donut spare when you're trying to drive off-road, it does not work.
Oh, absolutely. And it's got a 3,500-pound towing capacity.
That's not bad.
Keyless entry. It's got hill descent control, which I tried out. It does work, but you have to know how it works. Read your manual before you do it. There's a new sand mud mode that you only get with the Onyx edition that's part of the X mode. So that works out pretty well.
Kind of a sub mode.
Yeah. Something that really gets you out of that muddy territory when you're on the trail. Now, there's also this thing called StarTex. StarTex, which sounds really exciting, is actually the interior material that they're using on the seats.
Oh.
So it's not leather, it's not vinyl, it's not rubber, it's not cloth.
It's not leatherette?
No, it's not leatherette, technically speaking. The StarTex is actually a material that has elements in it that can protect the seats from wind, rain, mud, and all of that. Easy to clean.
Oh, so it's more of an off-road type interior.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a Jeep Wrangler.
Yes. So it's a man-made material. It doesn't pretend to be leather, but it is a good step up. And I was in it all day long. I had t-shirt and shorts on, and I was still able to be comfortable in it. It didn't get too hot on my posterior when I was getting in the car after being out of it. And you can see how they might integrate that further into the lineup down the road. It makes a lot of sense for people, especially people who want to use the vehicle for more off-roading.
Yeah, well, Subaru makes a good vehicle. They've run a lot of awards for quality and things like that. They're like conservative. They're quiet. They don't make these wild vehicles and things like that. Of course, they do have, you know, the WRX STI and those kind of things. And so, but it's really a chance to see these guys come out with something bigger and bigger. I mean, the Ascent is an awesome vehicle. It's a big vehicle.
Absolutely.
I was like, if you go back 10 or 15 years, you're like, Subaru building this vehicle that big? Oh, my gosh.
Well, I think it's true. You know, people love their Subaru.
They used to be so
funky.
But
Subaru seems to really love their customer. They're giving their customer just what they want.
But it's still funky.
Yeah. There's still some elements there. It's not your typical vehicle. You get in a Subaru, you're in a Subaru.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're doing a really good job with that. They're staying true to their brand. And even with their price point, I mean, the Outback starts at $26,645, tops out just below $40,000.
And that's sticker, folks. You can get a better deal than that.
Right. And the best part is made in America.
Yeah, well, there you go. But I mean, it's a great deal. All right. Well, thanks for talking about that. And we've got a lot more. We're here at the Nissan Versa launch. And sorry about all the noise and things like that. But
thanks, Matt. This week I was driving, and I was a lucky guy this week, the 2019 Maserati GT convertible MC version. That's the tire trim level. And this is an upgrade from the standard GT, which is a mere $150,000. The upgraded GT MC has a base price of $164,000, but mine had the nicer interior with its velour and things like that, if it can be one, because this is the nicest interior. And it had the carbon fiber interior and exterior package. For example, the hood alone, just the hood, was an extra $10,500. So it came in at a bargain at $193,492. So nice car. I don't know how to put this thing. It's like having a Ferrari. It's not the most exotic. This car is actually pretty simple. You know, it's a naturally aspirated V8. It's got a Ferrari engine. Oh my gosh. is this thing sweet. But it's, you know, it competes with the Lamborghinis, some of the BMWs, and of course the Mercedes-Benz like I had the week before. That was, it was just an unbelievably nice car. It was just so pretty. You know, the Italians make such really nice designs. It's not real edgy or anything. It's got real smooth flowing lines. The interior is just the same way. It's just really just smooth and nice. It's kind of, like I said, it's a four-seater. But the back seats are really not good for much. You'd have to scoot the front seats way up and other things. Like, you could put the dog back there, but, you know, it's a convertible, so it'd have to be a little dog. But it's just so neat. It's just for 2019, they haven't really changed much. They haven't changed this vehicle in years, and that's good because it's got a gorgeous front end and the tail section. It's a real wide vehicle, too. That's what's kind of funny. It's just so sexy. You know, it isn't the best deal on a convertible out there, that's for sure, but it doesn't have to be. This car is on everybody's bucket list. When you look at it, it's beautiful lines. It's really cool Maserati grille. It's got the trident. You know, it looks like the Aquaman movie or something. Right there in the grille staring right at you. It is so sweet looking. I mean, that's one thing is, as I was pull up somewhere, everybody was just like, wow, he must have stolen that thing. No, I'm just... It's such a beautiful vehicle. I had three or four ladies say, man, that is the prettiest car I've seen in a long, long time. Who's it made by? And I explained to them things like that. Even though I was in a Mercedes-Benz the week before and it was another $10,000 or $15,000 more, this one got three times as many looks. It's just so Italian, you know what I mean? And this thing, you just look at it, your pulse starts beating a little bit faster. And when you hear the V8 start up, it's got this really, had a sport button, which I'm sure, Matt, you would be keeping in sport mode everywhere, which changes shift points and changes some things. But the main thing, it opens up the exhaust, and it's got a little a valve in there to make it free-flowing, kind of like the Corvette and some of the other companies have. And when you hear that V8, your heart's going to skip a beat, your palm's going to get sweaty, and you can't help it but smile. You know, you have a grin on your face, and there are people going, what is wrong with that guy? If you're driving a car like that, you're going to smile a lot. This is one of the cars everybody notices, too. All kinds of looks. And sure, it has some of their latest gadgets like Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. But if you're looking for a really super high-tech vehicle, it ain't going to do it. And the audio system was very, very nice. But, guys, I hardly even turned on the stereo because the exhaust sounded so good. Especially if you're going under an underpass and you just rev it up and let it come down. It's just people all look at you like you're driving. It sounds like a Formula One car. This thing has like over a 7,000 RPM red line. It's not one of those, you know, low revving V8s. This is a high revving Italian V8. And 454 horsepower. It's just great V8. It's just like I said, it sounds like American F1 car. You never get tired of the sound. And the suede leather interior, surprising quality. If everybody talks about Italians, maybe not the best quality. The fit and finish on this was very good. This car had 6,000 or 7,000 miles on it, and they're tough miles. Some of the track miles, that thing was beat up pretty good. No squeaks, no rattles, which I was actually surprised. Because people on the Italians, you know, you put up with the car maybe not being reliable, maybe this or that, and squeak or rattle, because they're just so Italian. What can I say? It's just that, you know, granted, the comfortable seats, very comfortable, not much room in the back seat. The paddle shifters are stationary. That's one thing that's cool. This is a vehicle you really use the paddle shifters on, and it has a rev matching. So when you go to downshift, it automatically matches the revs, which you hear the engine running up there. That sounds even sexier. But they're stationary. They don't turn with the wheel, and they really, really work better that way. It's got the 8.4-inch Uconnect system, which is from their deals with FCA, Fiat Chrysler, and that's really kind of cool. But it's simple. This is almost a retro kind of vehicle. It's got small buttons on a lot of the features of the car, including the top. You have to push the button for the top, and you push the button to roll the windows down and up and things like that. And the top, automatic top, it folds in the back. And this is the first car I've had in a long time that actually uses the key to start it up. Did not have remote, did not have push button start. When you talk about cargo space, there's not a lot of cargo space. If you're going to go somewhere for the weekend, pack light. How's that? Driving this sucker, It'll take turns like you want an Italian sports car to take them. It'll take the turns faster than you can take them. How's that? It's not as fast as a Challenger SRT or even a Mustang GT, but once again, it doesn't have to be. It's not as comfortable or as quiet or near as fast as the Mercedes AMG S63 that I had last week, but it doesn't have to be that either. It's not as high-tech as this competition, but it doesn't have to be either. I mean, Audis are really high-tech. Mercedes are super high-tech. This is not. Okay, and to me, that's kind of like some of the appeal of it. You buy this car because you've got the money to, and you've always wanted one. Disposable income, and you've always dreamed of owning a Ferrari, but maybe this is a step down from a Ferrari, but, you know, it's owned by the same company, and they have a lot of shared parts, and it's just like Italian stuff. It's beautiful. I was lucky enough to live out my fantasy this week, you know. For that, I want to thank Maserati because, guys, if you have a chance to go test drive one of these, before you go look at your Mercedes and some of the other BMWs and stuff like that, go look at the Maserati because it's smoking hot.
Thanks for listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. Back next week, same place, same time. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts for next week's edition of Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast.